You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
Hello and what is shaking, everybody? Welcome to a new episode of the Wind Up Podcast. I am your host, Mike of MTGA Wines, and we are back after a few weeks of being on the road and traveling and doing all of the things. We are here to get a new, fresh episode out your way. As usual, before we dive into the episode, we've got a couple of quick announcements, but we're going to be really diving into this kind of world of travel, the vibe of people and wine and retail shops and restaurants around the country, and kind of see where everybody is at. We've talked a lot over the last few months about kind of the downturn in alcohol sales, tourism to the Napa area, all this kind of stuff. And I think there are some positive things to pull from it. I am very typically an eternal pessimist, but surprisingly enough, I found some really good things that I think we can draw on from the experience over the last 2.5 weeks being out and about and all over the country. Before we dive into it, though, as always, please do like, share, review, subscribe to the show here. Helps with all of the algorithm and getting this out into the airwaves. You can follow us on all of our social networks at MTGA Wines. We are most active on the YouTube, where you can see the video version of this and me dancing around my office. Also on the Instagram, we do post things on the Book of Face and on the social network formerly known as Twitter, but less so. So Instagram and YouTube are really the places to find us. We are officially brought to you by a new endeavor that we have embarked on just in time for the holiday season. The HBIC and I have put together a few kind of fun wine influence t-shirts and swag through a company that we've called Premier Crew, that's CRU Clothing. .com. You can go directly to that website right now, check out some of the new designs. We're going to have stuff coming out probably every like season or so with some new things, new phrases, new designs, all kinds of good stuff. You can use the code PREMIER for 20% off your first order. Again, that's Premier Crew, CRU. That's a Premier Crew wine. Premier Crew Clothing.com. Use the promo code PREMIER during checkout. We'll get you all taken care of. It's been super fun to kind of put some of these together. It's a lot of very wine-inspired kind of geeky things and some that are just more tongue-in-cheek, you know, ironic or kitschy or fun or whatever. Perfect for the holiday season and all the gift-giving and all the things. Last and certainly not least, I would be remiss if I did not thank everybody who came out to our events over the last couple of weeks. We were in Springfield, Missouri, Kansas City, Atlanta, Charlotte, Tampa, back to Atlanta. We were all over the place over the last few weeks. And the reason that we get to do that kind of stuff and bring our wines around the country is largely because of the support of some of you, of course, I saw while we were on the road. Others, we'll certainly try and make it to your neck of the woods sometime soon. But that is truly how we do things like this. It gives me the time to actually stand here and record a show rather than have the day job that I got to worry about and do kind of the fun things outside of just kind of the normal wine business stuff that we have to deal with. So without you guys supporting us when we're on the road or here listening to the show here, we would not be able to do it. So thank you all very, very much. With that, let's go ahead and dive into what the last couple of weeks of travel have meant, and also kind of where this industry is going and where it seems like it's going. Because it seems like there's been a lot of doom and gloom when it comes to the wine industry recently. You're seeing tourism down, you're seeing wine sales are down, you're seeing large distributors like Southern Glazer's firing hundreds or thousands of people. You're seeing vintage wine estates file for Chapter 11. You're seeing all kinds of craziness out there. And it doesn't look like it's boding very well for many of us. And there are some of us, myself included, and Brittany knows this as well, where times are tight. We've had to tighten up the belt. We are spending as little as possible so that we can kind of get through paying our grape bills and prepare for bottling in February, which is always, you know, a big expense, and just be on an even keel. It has been very, very difficult to do that this year. But despite those challenges, I think for those businesses that were kind of ready for them, they're going to come out better than they ever were before. I think this is very, very akin to what happened into 2008 and until 2011, is you saw a lot of businesses that just weren't doing that well either slowly fade into the sunset, or you started to see the mergers and acquisitions start to take over, where it became a great buying opportunity, as you might expect, for people that were ready to buy low and then potentially sell those at a premium. Buy low, sell high. Basic economics, right? You would think. And I think that's kind of where we're at yet again. That we're, number one, in kind of this transition phase between generations. We're seeing a lot of wine that is well made, but it doesn't have a lot of story or kind of X factor to kind of keep people's attention, start to fade by the wayside. You see a lot more people asking very, very tough questions about the industry, about how wine is made, what their wine actually contains in terms of sugar, for example, because we have really kind of gone after Meiomi as an industry over the last couple of months, myself very much included, knowing that they have an incredibly sweet wine that they are making under that Constellation brand. So there's a lot of things shaking up the industry right now. And personally, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I tend to be the eternal pessimist. I am constantly worrying about the worst case scenario. Not a great way to go through life, I will admit. I probably stress myself out way more than I should. However, my inner Boy Scout is always prepared. So when we have a tough financial situation and things are a little tight like they are right now, we have the ability to get through it. We can formulate a plan and start to execute on said plan to make sure that we stay solvent as a business. You know, it's important. And then we try and do things outside the box to help support the business and keep things moving in a forward motion, I suppose. So let's start with kind of the attitude in all these different locales over the last couple of weeks. It was certainly echoed that, one, people are drinking less right now on average. Sales of alcohol in general are down, right? Two, because of that, everyone's trying to figure out, like, what do we do next? How do we get a new, younger generation, the Gen Zers of the world, into wine? And this is something that I know a lot of people are worried about, and people kind of view it as like this neo-prohibitionist movement. I don't think it's that. I don't think we're looking at alcohol being outlawed again. I don't think that that's going to be a thing. I think that's, you know, just clickbait. But I think what this can do, and at least with some of the young people that I talk to, is that there are two things kind of in the back of their minds that tie into kind of everything that I mentioned. One is that if we're going to be buying wine, it's important to us that we know where it's coming from, kind of what the story is, and the overall quality of it. There has to be some sort of emotional tie to what we're purchasing. And you're seeing this not just in Gen Z, but millennials, Gen X. You're seeing that people are really starting to think more about their purchasing habits, especially with inflation the way it's been over the last few years. Everyone, you know, a lot of people are feeling the squeeze, you know, of how expensive the cost of living has gotten. We've had to cut back on a lot of our, you know, discretionary income because we've needed that to pay bills and, you know, take care of important expenses. So people are being a lot more frugal. They're being a lot more thoughtful with how they're spending their money. Because of that, I do believe that people have been more into buying quality versus quantity. You're seeing people ask, hey, is this wine really what they say it is or what I'm inferring? Or have I just been sold some sort of marketing scheme? And I think it's hard to get those answers from most wineries, which is why small brands like ourselves and other colleagues and friends of ours are doing okay, given the situation that the industry finds itself in, is because we actually have some authenticity. The people that get to know our wines actually get to know us, not just the wines. And
you're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
That is an immensely powerful thing. With all that in mind, and the movement towards maybe consuming less, but consuming more quality, also leans into the idea that, hey, it's okay to have a glass or two a night, potentially, and not just save it all for the weekend. I think this is kind of a big issue, is that we've gone through culturally kind of this binge drinking thing, which you see, you know, as in, you know, high school, through college, you know, even when kids aren't supposed to be theoretically, we have a very, very finite understanding of alcohol and how it integrates into daily life in this country. And I think that that is starting to change, which is a great thing, that people can practice moderation, including moderation. It's okay to tie one on a little bit on a Saturday or Sunday as you're watching college or college football or the NFL or whatever, but, you know, maybe not as much as you used to. Many of us don't want to wake up with the hangover the next day. Many of us just want to be able to enjoy a glass or two over the course of many hours. We don't want to get hammered. We just like what we like. And having a glass of wine is just part of kind of the ceremony. We're not drinking the wine anymore in a huge volume to, you know, just tie one on for the sake of tying one on. I think people are starting to understand that you can be more thoughtful when it comes to your consumption. So, I mean, very akin to how the Europeans do it, where wine is common to have, you know, it seems like during lunch and dinner, and there's always kind of wine available, a cocktail even. But you're not like getting trashed. You're just like having a little bit, take the edge off, a little social lubricant maybe, and you carry on. And that's it. You don't have to drink two bottles of wine yourself amongst a group of friends on a Saturday night just to have a good time. And I think some folks kind of waking up to that. That, hey, if you open up a bottle of wine, it's okay to have a glass or two and then finish it the next day or the day after that. That very regularly, a lot of high quality wines, going back to the quality versus quantity point, a lot of quality made wines will easily last a day, two, or three. And that you're able to enjoy them throughout the week, potentially, rather than opening a bottle and being like, oh, this was an $85 bottle. We got to finish it. No, you can slow play it. You can finish it tomorrow. You can finish it the next day. It's all okay. You can do it. So there's a mindfulness there that I think is starting to come into play. Now, I did mention kind of the generational shift as well. This is something that typically just takes time because if you look at Gen Z, I think the oldest, and I've mentioned this on the show before, I couldn't tell. I know we've talked about this previously. I can't remember which episode exactly. But Gen Z just doesn't have the spending power to buy fine Napa wine, typically. There's always exceptions, folks that have done really well for themselves at a relatively young age, and they are, you know, kind of ahead of that curve. Fine, whatever. But I would say the overwhelming majority of young people right now, and I would say young people, you know, being like 30 or maybe 28 and younger, you know, right into that younger generation, simply aren't spending money on a $120 bottle of Napa Cabernet. It's just not happening, right? Unless they have potentially, you know, a great expense account as they're taking clients out to dinner or whatever and be like, hey, I need to know something about wine because I need to, you know, entertain these folks appropriately. You know, that's how a lot of, I think, us millennials learned about wine, is that it became very practical because it was something that certain cohorts of people expected. It's like, oh, if we're going to be entertained and going out to dinner, we're going to the steakhouse, you better be ordering a good bottle of wine because, hey, you're fishing for new business here. So take care of us, you know, give us some of that social lubricant so that we can, you know, do business together at some point. So all those things being considered, I think this bodes very, very well, given kind of the tough economic times that many wine businesses find themselves in. Number one, I will say that this kind of rocky period for us started in the latter half of 2022. So it's been a couple of years. And wineries started to feel the burn at that time. In 2023, it continued. Maybe not a huge drop off, but enough that it was noticeable. Some of us did all right, all things being considered, some people were certainly down. This year, that has certainly exacerbated itself up until more recently. I think, you know, September, October, and as we've gotten into November now, we've seen things kind of pick back up from a sales perspective. Is that enough to make up for maybe some of the deficits that certain businesses are feeling right now? Maybe. Probably not. And I think what you're going to see, that is, if this continues into 2025 and we see kind of a more of a contraction of the wine business and wine sales, that we're in essence kind of that correction territory, right? And you're going to see some brands, much like 08 to 11, just slowly disappear. You're going to see mergers and acquisitions pick up a little bit. And you're going to find that the wine industry is kind of consolidating. And I don't think that's a bad thing. Very selfishly, maybe selfishly is the wrong word. That's not the way I want to put it. I think that just kind of my overall opinion of where wine has gone in the last 15 years is that it's been very fashionable to be a part of, which is why you see a lot of people with a lot of commas in their bank account buying properties, you know, creating new conglomerates like Lawrence Family Estates out here. You see new brands kind of popping up, you know, hiring, you know, big time consulting winemakers. And you see them really trying to just go whole hog into this industry that they don't necessarily have any business being a part of. And I know that sounds bad, but it's kind of that investment opportunity. And what any of us will tell you, for those of us that have been in the industry for a while, is that it's one thing to make wine. It's a completely different thing to sell it. I've seen so many brands over my lifetime here that have gotten into, you know, grape growing, winemaking, only to fail within a few years because their assumption was like, oh, we're making Napa Cab. Napa Cab is popular. People will just buy it. There's no story. There's no authenticity. You're just some rich person who decided to start a wine label. Whoop-de-fucking-do. That's fine. If you're really that passionate about the industry, please come and join us. But you need to share that passion with people. You need to be able to market it and sell it. You can't just, in essence, buy a vineyard, slap a label on your wine, and hope that people pick it up. Right? Hiring the right consulting winemaker can help to a certain extent, because if people know that your wine is made by a Melka or a Heidi Barrett or Michelle Roland, there's a certain level of quality there that is assumed, let's say. If you get that 100 point or high 90 point rating, maybe that helps you out a little bit more. And anyone will buy your wine once to try it. The problem is getting them to buy it a second time. We talk about this all the time, is getting that second date, that second sale, keeping that customer in the loop. And again, I don't believe there are a lot of brands that put a lot of thought into that, especially folks that are kind of newer. Anytime I take on a consulting project, and this has happened over the last, over the last 4 or 5 years, is that when I start, these are some of the questions I ask these potential clients. Because quite frankly, I don't want to be a part of a brand that fails. I want to know that, hey, you're in this for the long haul. If I'm going to be making your wine or assisting you in making your wine, that we are on the same page. We have the same goals here of creating something that is memorable, something that actually has that authenticity. So, for example, when I was consulting for some clients out of the state of Missouri, they bought a property out here. We were making some Cabernet and some Cab Franc for them. My first thought, and they were friends before they were clients, which made this conversation a little bit easier. But my first thought was like, how do we tie this back to where you're from? You know, kind of avoid the things that we're talking about. You're not just someone kind of moving in, starting a wine brand for the sake of starting a wine brand. Let's really put some thought into this. And my
you're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
First thought is like, how do we tie this back to Missouri? And my first thought was like, well, I don't really use a lot of American oak in my own winemaking, but maybe this is something that could work for them. And it's like, let's be really thoughtful about our barrel selection. Let's say, hey, this is where we're from. We love Napa wine. We want to make Napa wine. We have this amazing property, but we're from this other state. Let's tie these two things together, use some Missouri oak and create kind of this special lot within this program that ties not just to Napa, but also back home. And helps hopefully kind of exude that passion and and hopefully some level of authenticity. Like, let's be really thoughtful about this. We'll see how that works out in the long run. That wine is still very much in barrel. We bottled the first vintage of it back in August. The next vintage is still in barrel. And I'm very excited to see how that works out. And I think, that they've taken a lot of my word, not necessarily as gospel, but they've taken it very seriously. Like, hey, if you're going to be successful, number one, this is a long-term endeavor. Do not expect to, blow up in your first couple of years. Number two, for the love of God, make sure you're being authentic. Don't just be hiring consultants for the sake of hiring consultants. Don't, spend a shit ton of money on something that is going to go nowhere fast. It's better to spend less and do it right and be sold out of wine than it is to make a boatload of wine and not have any avenue to sell it. Be thoughtful. Be very thoughtful. So we'll see. We'll see how that all shakes out. That is definitely kind of an ongoing project. And that's something that I see kind of, I don't know if this is, kind of the overall vibe, but the brands that seem to be having issues are the ones that got out over their skis. Like Vintage Wine Estates is a great example. We don't know this for sure, but it seems as though, they acquired, they had a lot of debt, building new facilities, acquiring properties, they got out over their skis, interest rates went up, and it's like, boom. It was just a bubble ready to burst, perhaps. That's kind of what many of us have inferred. I don't know whether or not that's the case, but that seems very likely. There are other brands that don't necessarily have that X factor, that story, that, I'm trying to think of the right word, that authenticity, that are just selling wine for the sake of selling wine. And many of them are in trouble. Many of them aren't selling wine at the rate they need to be because there's too many great options out there. This is kind of the other thing is that, if you don't really have any way to connect to your consumer base and there's so much good wine readily available, why should they buy yours if they don't really care about it that much? I mean, that's a genuine question. If people are looking for authenticity, if they want better experiences, if they want to get to know the people behind the label, and you're not providing any of that, what makes you think that your wine is going to stand out amongst the crowd? Like, I'm sure it tastes good, but there's a lot of good fucking wine out there. Like, don't pretend for a second like yours is special. Like, this is the, you know, this is where, like, insert the, whatchamacallit, Fight Club quote here. Like, you're not your fucking khakis. Like, you're not special. There's a lot of amazing wine out there. Anyone can go out and hire a top name consultant, buy, you know, brand name fruit from a Beckstoffer or something like that, and slap and put a wine label together. If you've got the money in your bank, you can totally make that happen. It's not hard. It's not special anymore. Just like, and not to hate on like someone like Screaming Eagle, but I can go online right now and buy pretty much any vintage of Screaming Eagle. Like, let's check this out for a second. You know, this is maybe not any vintage, but this is certainly a thing. And it's, you know, on a second, it's like on an auction site or whatever, but this is a thing. Like, it's not hard to get these wines anymore. Let's check this out real quick. Let me minimize this. Hopefully, for those of you watching, I'm kind of minimizing my screen here. Look at this. This is simply winebid.com. You know, feel free to check it out if you want to. But look, you got some 93, 94, 97, 2010, 2001, 2021, 2020. Ooh, they actually made a 2020. That's kind of surprising. Ooh, it even got a 99 from James Suckling.
Yeah, it's quite.
Yeah, you're going to pay a premium, you know, $3,000 there, $3,700 there, $2,700 there. Cool. You want Screaming Eagle? Here it is. Go buy it. We are not sponsored by them. We don't do any business with them, but it's not hard to, it's not hard to find these wines. Okay. So if you really love what Stan Kroenke's done with the place, you know, have at it. Go for it. There we go. Well, let me close that down real quick. So the point being, you know, even for what have been like the cult brands that everyone raves about, you can find them. It's not hard. A basic internet search. You can probably find your Harlan, your Mayas, your Ornellaias, your Petruses, your Cheval Blancs, whatever. Like, you can find these wines, your DRCs of the world. These wines are no longer exclusive, okay? So in a level playing field where everyone can kind of get anybody's wine, you know, easily, how are you going to separate yourself from that herd and be like, hey, I know you have access to all this crazy cool stuff. Here's why you need to be supporting us as a brand. That is why I'm incredibly optimistic for where this kind of downturn is headed. Because I think, this is just my, you know, me shaking my crystal ball and kind of hoping for the best here, but I truly think that as we talk more about this and wine becomes a little bit more commonplace and people understand, you know, what those cult wines mean versus what kind of the craft wine scene we're in is, that it really does start to matter, you know, whether or not you know those people, have an emotional attachment or a connection or a friendship or whatever it is. That cannot be understated and is why so many brands that started with kind of this grassroots mentality have been successful. The only reason that our wines continue to be made by us is because that is important to us. That when you sit down with us at a tasting event, and, you know, whether it's out at the winery or on the road like the last couple of weeks, you're quite literally meeting one of the two people that do everything for our wines. We know these wines better than anybody else. And that is important, that you have an emotional tie and an emotional connection. If our wines happen to end up in a retail shop or restaurant, big shout out to the guys at Swallow Wines out in Round Rock, Texas, to our friends, our distributor Bonded Beverage out in Missouri. We're presenting these wines to people we know, friends that we have. It's rare that we cold call people and are like, hey, please buy our wine. That's not how we operate. We operate based on that emotional connection and the relationship and the friendship that we have with people. And I think that with this contraction, the brands that are going to find themselves in hot water and likely go by the wayside are going to be those that just don't have that. Congrats, you're making good wine. Nobody cares. There's a lot of great wine out there. So what makes you different? What makes you relatable in any way, shape, or form? Right? The other big point, and of course we've touched on this a whole bunch, is that article from the San Francisco Chronicle, you know, that really basic, you know, exposed Meiomi and how much sugar is actually in that wine. Talking, you know, 19 to 21 grams per liter, depending on the last couple of vintages, you know, where wines like ours have 0.3, you know, quite literally 30 or 40 times less than a brand like that. More and more people have seen that article, have talked to us about it. We're talking to people about it. And people are genuinely, consumers are trying to figure out, like, if I'm going into a wine shop and I don't want to consume a bunch of sugar in my wine, how do I know? And for us to come back and say, I don't know, it's kind of luck of the draw. You either are, and you, that's just the ropes, or you're not, and you're getting lucky. Unless it's posted somewhere, you know, on that bottle, on their website, or whatever. And very typically, it's not. We've talked about this a lot. You can go back and listen to that episode about that Leawood, Kansas wine shop and kind of the revolution that that may have started. You know, if you're a brand right now that doesn't have that emotional attachment, that authenticity, and you're unwilling to let folks know what's actually happening behind your cellar doors, I don't know how you survive the next 5 years in this industry, if you even survive the next two. I am, this will probably be a hill I die on. You know, in a world where wine, the industry that I'm in, is playing third fiddle to beer and liquor by a lot. Like, last numbers I checked, you can probably Google this, like, average per capita consumption for, like, beer and liquor is roughly like 2 to 3 gallons per year per person. Wine is less than one. It's like 3/4 of a gallon. We're way, way behind where some of these other categories are in terms of beer, liquor, seltzers, things of that nature. If we're going to continue to grow as an industry, we need to become approachable. We need to have some sort of authenticity and great stories and good times and all this other stuff like these other categories have done. Otherwise, we're just going to continue spinning our wheels in the mud. You're going to see this ebb and flow of brands like we have over the last 10 years where a bunch of people, more people and more people dive into the industry. You see a contraction like we're seeing right now and kind of a correction within the market, and a bunch of them just disappear overnight. And then it builds up, and then it comes back. It's just kind of this living, breathing thing. But if we're going to continue living and breathing and moving forward, we have to find ways to connect with a broader audience, especially given the fact that we have smaller generations of people coming down the pipeline. Y'all baby boomers are, you know, probably buying a little less wine from time to time, you know, being a little bit more health conscious. You got big sellers that are stocked up, ready to go. You don't necessarily need to be buying as much wine right now. You have Gen X, Millennials, and Gen Z, which are smaller and smaller generations. If the same percentage of people keep consuming wine, then you're going to, just as years go on, less and less people drinking wine, unless you start to capture, you know, new blood and bring them into the fold. It's a huge issue. That's, for me, that's the biggest issue that we face as an industry, is getting new people into wine. You know, there are plenty of beer drinkers and liquor drinkers out there that aren't into wine. Why is that? I want to know. Very typically, it seems that it's intimidating, right? It's intimidating, or it's too sweet. And they don't understand it. And the reality is that all you need to understand, as we've talked about a bunch, is that you just need to know what you like. And if you know that, that's a great stepping off point. You know, there's a gal that was at our last event in Atlanta a couple nights ago, white wine drinker. Just like, she's like, but her, she described wine in a very specific way. She's like, I typically drink white wine because it's just very smooth. It's easy to drink, and it's not edgy. Like, it just, it hits my taste buds in a very nice, even keeled fashion. And I challenged her. And good on her. She was like, all right, yeah, cool. I'll go for this ride. And I said, let me pour you a little bit of red wine. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but this is just, it's probably the smoothest one we have here on the table. Just nice and easy. Give it a shot. If you don't like it, no harm, no foul. But I want you to try this because I want to see if I can kind of challenge your taste buds a little bit. She's like, all right, cool. So I pour this red wine. She tastes it, has a couple sips of it, thinks about it for a little bit. I come back to her after maybe like 3 or 5 minutes. I'm like, so what'd you think? She's like, that was really delicious. What is it? I'm like, that's our Napa Valley Cabernet. That's one of the biggest, baddest varieties that you can probably get in this country. And you enjoyed it because it's just made in a style that suits your taste buds, right? Those are the kinds of connections I'm talking about. That's the kind of education I'm talking about. I'm not talking about picking out flavors and characteristics, getting your SOM certificate or going through the WSET program, just learning a little bit more about what you like and opening the door for somebody to be like, hey, see, not all red wines are trash. Not all of them are edgy. Not all of them are super bitter and tannic or alcoholic or sweet. You can walk through this door and enjoy some of these with us. That's the kind of stuff that for me personally has been way more impactful than a rating or a review or, you know, any kind of press. Like, that's the kind of stuff that I think makes the world go round for us small producers. And I feel as though right now you have to weed through a lot of other nonsense to get to that point here in Napa. So we'll see. We'll see. It does seem as though there are a lot of inquiring minds out there, that people are still very interested in wine. They're very interested in knowing what's in their wine and what goes into that process. And I think the industry as a whole needs to continue to shift and move that direction. And if you as a brand are just going to stick to your guns and not build those relationships and not be open and honest with your consumers, you're toast. You're going to be toast. Hopefully you can cash out and sell it to some conglomerate, and hopefully you don't just need a roll up shop. But yeah, I don't see it boding very well for those that don't move in that direction of authenticity. That's going to be really, really important as time goes on. This is why I love traveling around the country, as exhausting as the last 2.5 weeks have been. It's having these conversations with people, getting kind of a general vibe of what's going on out there. Obviously, it's all anecdotal. It's just kind of this gut feeling, again, kind of me shaking my crystal ball and trying to figure out, like, where is this industry headed? What are people looking for? People are looking for great wine. People are looking for great stories. They're looking for something to connect to. And I think there are a lot of people in the industry and a lot of brands in the industry right now that are doing a shit job of that. And that's why you're seeing this contraction. You know, it's the natural ebb and flow of this market. And I think, you know, for those of us that have managed to get through this halfway decently, not have to roll up shop, it was close this year, I'm not gonna lie, it was close. But those of us that have been able to kind of stick to our guns and do these things that I'm talking about, that's why we're gonna come out stronger after this than we ever have before. Because people are going to know who to trust. They're going to know who they can talk to and relate to. And they know who they're going to be friends with. And where their friends need to go when they finally plan a trip out here. All right. I think that's enough rambling after the last couple of weeks. I got to tell you, hopefully that made sense. I tried recording this and I actually did a pretty good job. I really loved the vibe that I recorded this. I was in my hotel room in Atlanta. And I hope I captured it, but I could hear the AC in the background the whole time. It's just this gentle, I was like, oh my God, that was such a good episode, but I have to re-record it. You might've even heard my heater kick on because it's cold and rainy here in Napa right now, but I hope that kind of covered everything in terms of kind of where it seems like this country is going and where wine consumers like yourselves are. Hopefully you agree with some of that. If you don't, I mean, I would love to hear from you. If you have any other thoughts or anything, I mean, please slide into our DMs and let me know kind of where you're at in terms of your wine consumption, what you think about the industry and kind of where it's going and what's important to you. This is something this show was always meant to be, is collaborative, especially with our audience. So if there are any of you out there that want to chime in, slide into our DMs, send us a note, and we will talk about it and continue talking about it to see where we all end up. Thank you all so much for tuning in. This has been an episode of the Wind Up Podcast. Again, please subscribe, rate, and review the show wherever you're consuming it. You can follow us on all of our social networks at MTGA Wines, primarily YouTube and Instagram. Be sure to check out PremierCrewClothing.com. That's CRU as in Premier Crew Wine. Use the code Premier during checkout for 20% off your order and get yourself some cool t-shirts and swag for gift giving this holiday season. My favorite one's got to be the DRC RC one. You'll see it if you go to the website where it's like Domain Romani Conti, but it's like the ACDC logo. I'm very proud of that one personally. It's rad. It's super rad. We will be back next week. Let me see what we got. Is next week our Q&A episode? It sure is. So that reminds me, last announcement before we wrap up here is that if you have any questions, be sure to submit them into our DMs or go to our website, mtgawines.com. Scroll down a little ways. You will see a little email form that you can fill out to submit questions for a Q&A episode. We will be taking your questions and answering them to the best of our ability next week, November 27th, right before Turkey Day. All right, that's it for me. Love you guys. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.